Welcome to this episode of Saintly Witnesses, where I speak to Catholics across social media and where we talk about important things regarding life, philosophy, justice, and all things related to the human experience. Today I have Miss Honey, who's going to come on and share a little bit about her faith journey, but also highlight the importance of how she implements hoodoo and traditional folklore or folk African religion into her practice of Catholicism. So thank you for coming on and highlighting such a crucial topic.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here today. So I'm just looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, and so what I typically see on Twitter, what made me want to reach out is that you do the hoodoo rosaries. I think that's a I'm sure you're going to talk more about that. I don't want you to talk about it right now,
Get
but
into it yet.
I think it's very mesmerizing. But I'm definitely looking forward to hearing it. But mainly I wanted to have this conversation about hoodoo and religion in America, because I think it revolves around how Black people practice self-determination in religion. And I think when you it's multiple origins, but one origin I can think of is how during the Salem witch trials, the Caribbean African woman Tituba was like the scapegoat for these this white Puritan backdrop, and she was the blame. And ultimately, during enslavement, you see so much condemning, suppressing, and outlawing how the Africans enslaved Africans and it's like practice their religion. And even now, like Black religion, Christianity, and other religions that Black people have adopted, it's peculiar, and it's like maligned by dominated white Christianity in America. So I think it would be crucial just to have this conversation and see, like, it ultimately evolves around self-determination in Black people. So I wanted to see what you thought about that.
Okay. I have a lot of thoughts about that, to be honest. I have a lot of thoughts about that. And I think the starting point I'm going to pick is that Black religion in America, to me, is demonized. Our expressions of Christianity, our expressions of our ancestral religions, the ways that we carry them, there is still to this day such a stigma attached and a stigma attached that affects how we as Black people see our own ancestors, see our own. What's the word that I want to use? See our own agency within spirituality, I think. I think in a lot of ways, the way that, I don't know why my computer is updating. I think a lot of the ways that our practices are demonized are also ways that for other people, their practices have been demonized. All indigenous practices in a lot of spaces have been. And so the version of Christianity that we see is whitewashed is, to me, this is going to be a strong word, but I think the version of Christianity that we see perpetuated by whiteness is an impotent Christianity. It's an impotent spiritual practice because it's so void of connection to who we come from, the ways that we come from. It's void of connection to preserving the earth that takes care of us, all of these things. So I think that, I'm trying to phrase this the right way. I think that whitewashed Christianity and the demonizing of indigenous practices and Black and indigenous expressions of Christianity, I think this is something that limits our ability to embody the love of God, to embody our personal relationship with God, and to truly practice self-determinism, to truly practice our agency. It robs us of that.
Yeah, you sound like a real pagan now, but that's good.
That's how God built me.
No, you good. You good. You said a lot of truth. But I'm sure you're gonna talk and elaborate more as we switch topics. But the first question is always the same question. Talk and highlight some of the major events in your faith journey. What was it like growing up, middle life, and how that led you to now?
Okay, so I'm going to condense this just so anybody listening knows. I've been on my journey since I was 7 years old. I will be 30 this coming April. So it is a lifelong vocation. I would say the most influential early thing would be when I was up 7, I moved schools, I moved cities, and my new best friend at my school was Muslim. This was the first time I had encountered another specific practice or experience of God, and it's something that followed me or still follows me to this day in my life. So I consider that a very influential blossoming introduction. Here is this other name for God. Here's this other set of prayers, all of these things. Going forward in my life, I actually was very interested in a lot of paganism. I practiced Wicca when I was younger. I did a lot of studying in those spaces. And so I did start with deity work. That's why I say on Twitter, I've done everything backwards. Like I did it inside out and going like this way, starting at Z instead of A. And so moving from there, I learned about the Orisha just a little bit. And I, moved to these spaces. And so I was interested in God. I was interested in divinity, but I was looking everywhere but Christianity. And I think that's because there were a lot of wounds there. When I was 15, my mom had us convert to Catholicism. This was a big issue for me, but also a blessing. And I was really, it's easy to look back now and see it, right? But I was really, really resistant and hesitant. And part of that hesitance was because I was very drawn to Christ, but repulsed by a lot of the things that I see embodied by the church, or what is labeled as the church, although we know that the whole body of the church, all the people that are a part of it, don't support all of the doctrine of the church. But I was very drawn to Christ. I was very drawn to the mysticism, but I felt like my own free will was being overstepped. So I'll keep moving forward, fast forward some. When I was in my early 20s, I was recovering, starting to recover from some serious substance abuse, some serious addiction issues, and a lot of depression. And I decided to seek out spiritual life again. I said, there's a reason I've been drawn to it my whole life. There's a reason I have the gifts that I do. There's a reason that it keeps being brought to me and brought to me with confirmations from outside of myself. So I'm going to put everything down. I am going to get clean. I'm going to set up some rules for myself. And I'm going to pursue what a healthy heart looks like. Almost at the same time, I got hired to work in a convent, in a Felician convent, which of course is Franciscan in origin. And Saint Francis is a huge part of my life at this point. So at the same time I was choosing my own health, God was showing me a space where I could, in a way, I think, get some very supportive, mystical, practical guidance, some real life-changing help. And of course, the sisters that I cared for didn't know all of the things I was going through or all of the spaces of my practice, because my practice over the years has looked very not Catholic before it got to this point. And they affected my life so deeply that going forward, I was never the same. And those are some points that I would say are major, and that there's a reason that I'm still within Catholicism. There's a reason it's still the space for me. And it's because they taught me such transformation. And through them and through that space, God was like, you can feel better. You can feel different. And as that happened, it folded together with my ancestral journeys and my desires to know and heal my lineages and the things that have made me, predisposed to pain and to other stuff like that. And I realized that this mystical life and this devotion and this work with Jesus went hand in hand with my ancestral practice, that it went hand in hand with the healing of my lineage, that it went hand in hand with understanding all the spaces that not only made me who I am, but also helped me to see others, to recognize more deeply the ways the human condition can play out. So.
Okay, that's I know I always say dynamic a lot, but it's like a real journey, as you say, and it's a continual journey for you as you navigate life now. So that's interesting, really interesting. So from you coming from like a, you've sampled a little bit of a lot of different things, had some crucial interactions with other faiths. What would you say to somebody who's thinking about becoming a Catholic? Like, what's one thing that you would say to that person, you think?
I would say, I feel like these two things are honestly of equal importance. Do your due diligence and discernment, and do your best to genuinely follow your heart. I think, and this is my opinion, so some people will disagree, I think God has intentionally provided a myriad of paths for us to know them. I think God has created infinite ways for us in our hearts to meet them. So if you are called to Catholicism, I would advise people to say, okay, how is this going to be medicine for me? And how will it help me be medicine to the community? How can I live this not as, okay, I'm Catholic, here's the dogma, here's the Apostles' Creed, here's this. How can I go be, I'm going to butcher the quote, but what St. Francis said was, the only sermon some persons may hear today basically is your actions. If I am going to be Catholic, am I going to embody the actions that Jesus would want me to embody? Am I ready to make that as a promise and make that as a life? And I would say that same thing for anybody pursuing a conversion into any faith. Are you choosing this out of your heart, out of love, out of curiosity, out of desire to be a better person? Additionally, I would say, get to know God. Take your time and let God get to know you. Take your time with the catechism. Take your time getting to know the saints. Really enjoy, let it be a relationship building.
Two good pieces of advice, especially like allowing the resources of the church to like sink in and like compel you to be guided by the Spirit to like know and love God. So that's a really good point, one and two. So we're gonna
Yeah,
transition and
100%.
go. No, you good. We're gonna transition and go to a different topic. I know we kind of highlighted a little bit about like your embrace of ancestral religion. So how, and I know that you, I mentioned that about the Hoodoo Rosary. So how did you first get involved, with elements of Hoodoo, and how did you start implementing that in your faith as a Catholic?
Okay, so I have to preface this by saying everything is always connected. God does stuff early, years before we're born, and works throughout our whole life. And this is important because it's how I came to Hoodoo, it's how I came to ancestral practices. Years and years and years ago, when I was like 15 or 16, still in my spaces of studying Wicca and studying, other religions, it's easy to see how Wicca and neo-paganism cherry pick because I found Oshun in a book of goddesses. Oshun is an Orisa. She is not just a goddess. That's beside the point. I found her, and it was the first time I saw a deity who looked like me or who reminded me of me. Although I would say at this point, Oshun is better represented as a beautiful, darker woman than myself. But it's the first time I saw somebody looking like me, and who, when I saw about her, I felt something in my heart, and it stayed. Mind you, this is about the same time that my mom was having us convert to Catholicism. So these things are happening parallel to one another. And my mom had us convert because this was a call that she had years before that. So it's through my growing up. So I saw her, fast forward some years, I'm 19 or 20, and I'm like, Santeria is calling me, Lukumi is calling me. I am feeling this call. The same strength that I feel a draw to Jesus, I feel this call. That means I have to listen to that. I have to go see why. And what I began to find was that, my ancestors there, the people that I come from are there. And I identified this wound of, my father's family and I are not close. He and his family, especially growing up for me, were not close. And so the disconnect to my own lineage, to myself, to other parts of me was very strong. I'm biracial. And so to me, this was, especially being raised a lot with white family, this was triplicate important to me to find, to recognize, to elevate, to have relationship with my ancestors, both recent and farther past. And so as I began to pray and to ask God to connect me with them, different things would come up that would point me to Lukumi, that would point me back to Catholicism, that would have me in these spaces. So I'll condense it again. I started to just pray about it. I started to pursue it. If I had a blockage, I would say, okay, I would just keep going. I had like 10 names to work from. If that, I would keep Googling names every year for the last 10 years, relentlessly. I would be searching things, pestering relatives, re-asking questions. And the more I did that, the more I got deeper in my devotion with God specifically. I want a clean heart. I want to have sovereignty over substances. I want to heal these wounds, have a closer relationship with my parents, see them with more compassion. The more information I would also get about my ancestors, the more information I would get around hoodoo, the more I would understand some of the myths and stories we've carried, the more I would understand the perseverance of our people. And so the two have grown in a parallel way for me, just just the whole time. To get to this point, to come back to your point about Hoodoo Rosary and to get to the present, over the last several years, I have found that A, of course, a lot of my ancestors were Catholic. I have a Mary Magdalene. I have an ancestor named Mary Magdalene that I found, from Alabama. I have Catholic ancestors going back. We have Catholic ancestors going back, to the motherland before they came here. And there are people who embodied the faith with such integrity, love, mysticism, art, that it is a space where the faith is untainted for me. It's a space where the faith is still, I think, whole for me. So to me, those two things go together. Hoodoo is an indigenous American faith, indigenous Black American faith, born from the perseverance of our ancestors. And when I think of Jesus, I think of Jesus as an ancestor. I think of Jesus as a mage. I think of Jesus as a descendant of Solomon. And I think of Jesus as somebody who was a leader. Simultaneously, we can look at High John the Conqueror. We can look at High John the Conqueror as a leader, as a mage, as a protector, as an ancestor, and as somebody who has helped lead hearts for Black people. So to me, the two go together. To me, the two are supportive of lineage healing, of honoring our roots and where we come from, and maybe most importantly, of reminding us that there is always hope in moving forward. There is always strength in moving forward. And that with God, especially in personal relationship, we always have agency to be a light in the world, to be an effect in the world.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. Definitely touched on a lot of good points, and I loved hearing how your own history, how you learned about, African religion, like the Oshun and the Yoruba people, helped influence your own identity and helped you influence your faith. So that was good. So talk a little bit about some of your unique practices that you may perform in your own spiritual life, like the Hoodoo Rosary or any astrological, like, awareness things that you do. And I think that's important because, like, the Bible is, like, replete with the people, the main characters using, I don't want to say like a fiction book, but the people like using like the people using creation to navigate and make crucial decisions, right? I think about the Magi, and like in the Greek words, they have two words for time. It's chronos, which is where we get the word chronology. And then we have kairos, which is like the exact appointed time. So, like, in my mind, when I think about astrology and how we kind of perceive it as like damnation and evil and hell, it's like, well, actually in the Bible, people was had a real wide sense of like the stars and how God purposely put these things in the creation for us to like reveal crucial themes and stuff. So I wouldn't be in a neighborhood to condemn it. We should be able to understand it. And I think the ancestors in like traditional African religion like had a good grasp of that. But I'm curious to know what you're gonna think on it, on like your practices though.
Okay, so first, I love that because what I'm going to start with is that's a very good point for having a love and curiosity-based spirituality, not a fear-based spirituality. Literally, even in the versions of the Bible that we have today, like you said, it is full of examples of utilizing the stars, utilizing creation, having breastplates with gemstones and jasper and bloodstone in them. These things are God's creation. They are the creation of God. When our relationship with God is based in fear, then we end up giving our sovereignty to those aspects of human corrupted dogma that say, well, this crystal has this power of evil. Really? More than God? This crystal has a power bigger than God? That's the portal that's going to end me? Okay. So I think having a curiosity-based spirituality, a love-based spirituality first. Second, owning your own sovereignty, knowing that you and your relationship with God are bigger than anything else, bigger than any portal, bigger than any spaces. I think that's important because it helps allow you to recognize what place everything has. And when I know that I am most sovereign, no method that God has given me is going to be stronger than me. That said, I really love Hoodoo Rosary. Hoodoo Rosary is my favorite thing. I really just started it this month, and I'm going to keep doing it every month. Our first one was focused on Nat Turner, and instead of using the traditional mysteries for that day, which would have been the Glorious Mysteries, I turned the stages of Nat Turner's life and then rebellion into the mysteries. The reason I did this was, one, God literally just put it on my heart. Like, I just sat down and wrote it out in like 10 minutes at work one day. But two is because the rosary is really meant to be a long form mystical practice and a meditation. People joke about it today, like, okay, you have to go to confession, you get your Hail Marys, or you do some rosaries, or it's quick. But the reality is, you don't even have to do the whole rosary. If you spend real time on that one decade and one mystery and real contemplation and real meditation, you will get such blessing from it, right? So we did Hoodoo Rosary, and the point of that first one, second one, and all the subsequent ones we'll have was to take a mystical look at our ancestors. And I think this ties in to the saintly six and this work for the canonization of African American saints, looking at the mystical life, the devotion, the effect, and what I would consider miracles of our ancestors. So that one focused on Nat Turner, we talked about, for example, his relationship to God and his relationship to the skies. And the reason that that's very relevant to this particular conversation, of course, is because Nat Turner had a long, long, long relationship with God. He had a deep devotion. He had such a devotion that he prayed every day the same thing, right? He prayed it, he prayed it, he prayed it until he saw a sign. Now, he didn't move on that first sign. He prayed again every day, I think for like 2 years before the next sign. And when he moved on an eclipse, and he moved because he saw it in the sky. He said, "This is the answer. This is the timing. And now I'm being told to go." So when I talk about this, there's a reason I prefaced it with that personal relationship and sovereignty. And it's because that personal relationship and sovereignty and that knowledge is required to accurately discern, I think, the stars and all of the other things. You still need to put in the time and the work for that knowledge base and discernment. But I do Hoodoo Rosary, and I utilize astrology and these things because I do believe that they were God-given gifts. I do believe that they were put here for us to work with, to have more agency in our lives, to make moves that encourage not only our own liberation, but the liberation, I think, of hearts all over, so that we can all be operating in love and freedom.
Yeah, and you mentioned the point about Nat Turner, which is really interesting on 2 points. I'm not gonna harp on this, but one thing is that, like, going back to the intro preface that we talked about was about Black the self-determination, and like you can see, like, immediately after the revolution of Nat Turner and his like liberation of the Africans, like you start seeing all these different laws in the South, like outlawing, suppressing, and banning religious gatherings, religious preaching, assembly, all that amongst like the enslaved Black people. So just going back to it, it's like we just really just want to practice how we practice, but every time we practice how we practice, they come and like control and malign it and try to disbar it in some way. And then secondly, I think it's also important too that you, when we talk about like Nat Turner, and you mentioned just like Harriet Tubman also, and like other freedom fighters for liberation, like they had like an innate sense of like relationship with the creator through creation, and they used that for their advantage for liberation and to like be a fighter for to end enslavement and like abolition. And so I think to your point, like those things go hand in hand. Like when you can definitely use God's creation to aid in like your liberation, and we've seen that so many times with other, I mean, it's probably other, it's countless other African descended people in America who have used creation for their advantage in that way. So my next point I wanted to ask, you mentioned that you being like a Black Catholic and you embracing like your historical lineage and folk religion and your practice with Catholicism and really immersing yourself in Christian and Catholic mysticism, which is a whole eye-opening like book of greatness when you really look into it, Christian Catholic mysticism. What are some things that you think other Catholics of African descent can explore and like mimic in their spirituality?
Ooh, I think there's a wealth there. One, I think that the biggest point again is connection. I think one of the biggest points is connection to our ancestors back in a way that helps equip us going forward. So when I look at mysticism, I'm thinking right now of Sister Thea Bowman, who I really only just recently learned about, but her love of music, and there's a piece, I've shared it on Twitter a couple times. It's on the USCBB, I think, website, but it's her I think essay on sacred song. Trying to put the words together. I think when we think about prayer and some other elements of Catholicism, it's very sanitized and made two-dimensional. When we look at Black Catholicism, we see the song sounding differently. We see the choir singing differently. We see more life in there. So I'm looking at the ways that prayer can look different when we're Black Americans and we do have trauma that we've carried all these generations. Something that's important, for example, is like physical motion, somatic ways to ground our body, to let our grief out, looking at practices like wailing and weeping and drumming and those things that were, like you very accurately mentioned, we were not allowed to do. Those were elements of praise before they were made, illegal or people were not allowed to do them. I encourage those kinds of things. I encourage connection that both embodies your faith and the ancestors so that we are literally getting grief out, so that we are stepping into joy. I'm saying these kind of practices can literally elevate our spirits. I think mysticism is very effective. I think long form prayers or even just mental and verbal prayer, if you don't have time to sit down and light a candle or look at a prayer card or you're feeling rushed, when you embody that practice, you can also bring your stress level down. You can deepen your immediate connection with God. You can catch yourself in a moment of dysregulation. So I think intentional mystical practice or making your relationship with God an every day, every moment, a full fabric part of your life, especially for Black people, especially for African descended people, I think it's something that can bring a sense of peace. I won't ever lie and say if you just do the prayers or just say the words or just do the surface things, that won't go for anybody. But if you intentionally take the time to make the practices medicine for you, that's the way I would embody it. When somebody gets their head orisha, it's not just who they would like. It's not just the one that would be the most fun for them. It's the most medicinal. I look at saints similarly. I'm looking at the saints. It's not going to be the saint I like the most or who I want to be the most like, but who is most medicinal for me right now? I'm thinking of Saint Moses the Black or Saint Moses the Strong, Saint Moses the Ethiopian, who said, the devil never sleeps. He was known to pray standing up with his eyes open. Or, I mean, sleep standing up with his eyes open while praying. I think that discipline, I think that spiritual discipline, I think that mystic discipline, I think that strengthening the heart and connecting back to the ancestors through, I feel like I jumbled that up, but finding that connection space for African descendants is something that can be healing for our body, our mind, and our spirit, and allow us to be more present with ourselves and in our communities.
I could elaborate, but I'm not going to elaborate. But you said it. You said it. You will. You said it well. And it's all about. It sounds like you basically sum up life giving, like our expression and how we sing and dance and our movements is all life giving. And that's all
Yes.
I'm gonna say on that. So I know in this conversation, you highlighted plenty of saints in the communion of saints that we have. You talked about Thea Bowman. You talked about Saint Francis. Who is a favorite saint and why? And also Mary Magdalene. So, like, who is a favorite saint and why?
I have been sitting with this question since I first read the email over a week ago, and I still don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. Every saint I meet, I feel like I'm genuinely meeting them. I feel like I am genuinely meeting them, and everyone has blessed me. I can't pick one favorite. Saint Francis is high on the list. Every time I turn around, Saint Francis is there. It's a family name that I've come across many times. Every order, every saint that I connect to somehow goes back to Saint Francis. So he's high on the list. Sister Bowman, though I just met her, has touched me deeply. And Saint Therese of Lisieux, forever and ever and ever. I very much love her. We can do small things with great love. Do all things with great love. Yeah.
I think those are three powerful saints, and especially like it seems like Thea Bowman is like all the rage in the Catholic Church, and she's rightfully a masterclass witness of the Christian faith. I think her remarkable work as a liturgist, her academic work, and also just being a great singer is what mesmerizes. What many find mesmerizing about her, as we are like seeing her canonization and like her road to canonization unfold. So she's the, and she's also like in our context, like 30 years ago, she just passed away. Now, no more than 35 years ago, so she's someone close in our
Gosh.
grasp that I think everybody admires. Well, I definitely appreciated this conversation, and I definitely appreciate learning more about who you are and learning about like your faith background and how you implement, you know, these traditional African elements into your Catholicism. It's definitely something commendable and something that provides you with a lot of purpose and meaning, and it's also life-giving to you. And may you continue on this journey, and may you continue to be a blessing to other people who you interact with as you spread and live a living testimony as an ambassador for Christ.
Yeah, I'm like, I just really felt that blessing though. Like, thank you.
Okay.
Let me just keep being an instrument. Thank you so much for this time. I loved it.
Be an instrument of peace, like Saint Francis, the Saint Francis prayer. Well, you guys can tune in to the next episode and continue to pray that Miss Honey continues to be an ambassador for peace and love on social media and in like her life.